All right. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Path to Millionaires podcast. I'm Ryan Fellman, and today I am joined by Ben Aldridge, and I will go ahead and let him introduce himself to you. Ben, thanks for joining us. Go ahead and tell the people who you are and what you do.
Hey, Ryan. Well, firstly, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I'm really excited to be here. So my name is Ben, and I'm a teacher and a writer, and I write about practical philosophy, adventure, and mental health. I've got my first book coming out in June, and yeah, I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited to be here and to talk to you about all of these topics.
What's the name of the book again?
So the book is called How to Be Comfortable with Being Uncomfortable. 43 awesome. Weird and wonderful ways to build a strong, resilient mindset.
So, that's awesome.
Long title, but we talked about how to leave your comfort zone and how basically we can build mental resilience by stepping out into that kind of fear zone and what we can gain from doing that.
Great. So like I recently had some experiences where something kind of shook me out of my comfort zone, where, you know, like many people, I'd been just kind of content with my life where I'd work hard the 9 to 5 and then, you know, go home and watch football and eat chicken wings or whatever. Right. And then, you know, I had a couple different events in my life happen, kind of shook me out of it. And it made me start to realize that some of these challenges can actually be good for you, even though like they're hard to get through. You know, what was that triggering moment in your life that made you start to embrace challenge instead of shying away from it?
So it's a great question. I think for me, the whole project really came about off the back of anxiety. I started to experience severe and debilitating anxiety a few years ago, kind of seemingly out of the blue. I was just hit with all of this overwhelming anxiety. I didn't understand anything about anxiety at the time. And I didn't know what was happening to me. I was having back-to-back panic attacks and I honestly thought I was dying. So it was a very extremely frightening experience. And the whole project came off the back of that. And it's kind of my response to that situation. It's how I dealt with it. I started exploring philosophy and all of these different subjects that then allowed me to kind of pick myself up out of this anxiety hole. So it was a huge moment for me, but that's kind of, you know, it's led me into such an amazing experience off the back of it. So it was initially very negative, very scary, but it's that kind of catalyst for change, which is really quite interesting.
Yeah, I've experienced the same thing where, you know, while you're like in the storm, you're dreading it, and you're suffering, you're hating it, and then you come out of it and you realize you're not the same person coming out of it as you were going in. And then, you know, that perspective starts shifting a little bit where you start to, you know, embrace these struggles. So, I mean, you're a young guy though. How old were you when you started having these like anxiety attacks?
Oh, this was a few years ago, and it's taken a while for it to completely change, but
Yeah. So how did you go from, you know, having this debilitating anxiety to actually like coping with it and being able to handle it? I think a lot of people are struggling with anxiety or something of the sort. Maybe they don't use that word, but I think it's a lot more common than people think. I've had moments where, I don't know if I've ever had like an anxiety attack, but I've definitely had times in my life where like anxiety was a big problem that I was struggling to get through.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's an extremely common condition. This in the UK, we have a mental health charity called Anxiety UK. And they reckon that 1 in 10% of people, all people have debilitating anxiety. And that's not just when you feel anxious about something. That's when you actually can't function properly. This is kind of general anxiety disorder. But it's extremely common when you think about that. And yeah, it's very, very frightening, but I think it's there are things you can do. For me, I found I started reading extensively, and this was what changed everything for me. I went to the doctor who diagnosed me with a general anxiety disorder, and I didn't really know what I was going to do with that information, and I needed some time to kind of process it. So I just kind of went back, gave myself some space, and just started reading. And I just read extensively on all of these different subjects, psychology, philosophy, self-help, absolutely everything. And just started to compile all of these like tools and tricks that I could start to use in my life. And this is where I kind of discovered one of the most important philosophies for me, which was Stoicism. And this is an ancient Greek philosophy, which is all based on building a resilient character. And this is something that I found really resonated with me. So I explored this philosophy a lot, and actually some of the ideas within Stoicism have really, really helped me.
Yeah, I kind of had a similar experience with how I got into Stoicism. I had heard people talk about it. It seemed like this kind of neat self-help tool. It felt masculine to me, so it was kind of something I was drawn to. I think there's a lot of like female blogs, a lot of mom blogs, a lot of, you know, like stuff geared towards women. And you know, when you're a guy, sometimes it's hard to find something that you feel, you know, fits into what you're looking for. And Stoicism was one of those that, even though it's not necessarily only a male thing, it felt like a masculine idea of, you know, I can't control everything in my life, but I can focus on what I can control, and that can help, right? So, you know, what was your gateway into Stoicism? How did you first start studying it?
Well, so when I was reading, so yeah, basically just lifting myself out of this anxiety hole with just ridiculous amount of book reading. And naturally you cover as many different topics as you can. And I read The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday.
Yeah.
I don't know that one. It's an amazing book. I really loved it. And from there, I just kind of got into a lot of the core of Stoicism and started reading like Marcus Aurelius and Epictetus and all and Seneca, and just really diving into that. And that's kind of my introduction to it. And then I found that so many of the ideas are just so pragmatic, and they're just, you know, they're so practical. Everything is, you know, that's one of the things that I love about it. It's not a concept that we can't apply to our lives.
Yeah, it's completely timeless. There's another book by Ryan Holiday called The Daily Stoic. Have you read that one?
Oh, yeah.
That's great. I used to read it every day. I've gotten through it now, but I still pull it out. Like it's sitting right here. Almost every day I pull it out and just read a page from it. It's a neat book. You know, you got it'll have like the date at the top, and then a quote from Seneca, Marcus Aurelius, Epictetus, and then, you know, like a little blurb talking about it. So, that's fascinating.
Instagram is great as well. The Daily Stoic. I kind of like that. Just being able to, you know, tap into that philosophy and just slowly feeding it, and you know, it's really interesting. I love his writing. He's just done one, The Stillness is the Key. Have you read that? His new book.
I've read the first three or four chapters of it. I'm actually reading it right now. It's been it's been next to my bedstand. So Ryan Holiday is a fascinating guy. I've been reading that and The Daily Stoic. I'm actually reading his Trust Me, I'm Lying, the first book that he wrote.
Yeah.
Which is not about Stoicism, but still a good read. And then I also saw that you got into to Buddhism. Tell me a little bit more about, you know, how Buddhism has helped with dealing with anxiety.
So all of these things, Stoicism, Buddhism, I talk about mindset as well. All of these things were ultimately tools that I could then use to deal with my anxiety. So Buddhism was really, I'm not Buddhist at all. I'm not a Buddhist, but I think that a lot of the ideas within Buddhism, again, are very practical and can really help us.
Yeah.
And for me, Buddhism is all about our relationship with suffering, and we can suffer in many ways. We can suffer, we can suffer physically. If we were to fall over, we would hurt ourselves. And you can understand that's kind of obvious, but mentally we can suffer as well. And this Buddhism talks about how we can, you know, deal with that. What's our relationship to that suffering? And there's lots of ideas within Buddhism that can be really helpful. The idea of living in the moment rather than living in the future, worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow, and actually trying to be more of a present human being.
Yeah.
And that's certainly something, there's a heavy emphasis on meditation within Buddhism. So this is that kind of, I found that really helpful. I was always living in the future, worried about what could go wrong, or, you know, what kind of fears were, you know, lying around the corner. And this was very helpful, actually getting into a bit of meditating and actually just trying to live a more present existence. I don't know if you meditate at all.
I do. It's something I constantly struggle with. You know, there's times where I do it almost every day. There's times where I forget about it. it makes a difference. I mean, the days where I just take a few minutes, sit there and just, you know, kind of empty my head for a moment, I feel less reactive. I feel like when something happens that's, you know, not great, I'm calmer and more prepared to handle it, instead of just, you know, there's days where I don't do it and I feel like I'm more impulsive. And if something happens to me, I want to lash out against it instead of actually taking a moment and collecting myself and thinking on it. So it's definitely helped me out. I'm sure part of that's age too. You know, when you're 22, everything's reactive, but when you're like, you know, getting into your 30s, you start learning to be a little bit more measured in your response, and, you know, not everything even deserves a response. So it's, yeah.
It's hard. It's not something that, it didn't come naturally to me. And I'm like you, I do struggle with it sometimes. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
If anything, it's highlighted to me how busy my mind can be.
Yeah. Modern society's just gotten so much busier, you know, and you know, here we are in the middle of this coronavirus shutdown, and in some ways it's kind of a blessing in disguise. I think it's letting people kind of slow down for a moment and catch their breath and to take life a little bit slower. And, you know, before all this, you know, I'm still working, you're still working, but before all this, I think everyone was constantly running around, constantly doing something, never taking a moment to stop and think. And now, like, one of the bigger problems seems to be, like, what do we do with all this free time?
Yeah. I think that's, it's certainly something that has come up, and it's really interesting. I seem to be busier than ever at the moment, which is kind of the paradox. Everyone else around me seems to, you know, be okay, sort of having a bit more time on their hands, but everything's kind of, yeah, speeding up for me at the moment.
I mean, now more than ever, mental health is important. I think people are starting to realize that maybe they're facing these issues that for so long they were kind of running away from. They were so distracted, so busy that they didn't even notice that they weren't happy or they weren't fulfilled, or, you know, maybe they had all these underlying problems, and, you know, this has given them the opportunity to actually, like, notice it for once.
Yeah.
Is that why you're busier?
No, it just happens that, you know, I've got my book coming out in a couple of months. Well, yeah, in June. And I'm a teacher as well. So I'm teaching remotely. So there's all of the kind of logistics to that. So it's, there's a lot going on. But yeah, I think it has kind of highlighted a lot of issues for people in mental health as well. I think when you are faced with something like this, very outside of our control, this big kind of crazy event, it is really scary, and then you have to kind of deal with that. So it's, what do you have in place that will help you to deal with that? And do you have anything in place? Or, you know, and that's, I think for all of us, it's about finding what we can personally lean on when we're facing difficulties. And for me, that was, you know, discovering things like Stoicism and Buddhism, and actually that helped me, and that's become something that I use in my life now. And obviously different people will have different things. Some people might have a faith that they lean on when it gets difficult, and it's just exploring what's right for you, because it's gonna be different for everyone.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, Stoicism is actually pretty deeply rooted into the Bible. What's the Serenity Prayer? Give me the peace to handle, or give me the strength to handle what I can, and the peace to let go of what I can't, or something like that.
There was a time when Christianity tried to sort of merge with Stoicism, but I don't think it successfully happened. It just kind of stayed on they were a little bit separate. There was that one moment when they nearly sort of, they were merging a bit, but
really?
There was a lot of Christian thought that tried to bring in the Stoicism, and because there's a lot of talk,
makes sense.
Stoicism, they will talk about the gods, and obviously that's something that has been used in Christian thought as well. So some people will like to use the ideas within Stoicism, but I think Stoicism is very flexible, and it can mix with a lot of different ideas. You don't, if you're a Stoic, it doesn't, you can't be of any other religion.
Right. Whereas Christianity, there's sets of laws that you're more or less supposed to follow, and Stoicism is more like a a toolbox where you can take pick what you need, right? Yeah. I think now more than ever, stoicism's being tested, you know, where if you're struggling with job loss or if you're struggling, you know, being stuck inside, there's always something you can do. And I think now more than ever, stoicism can be put into practice where, you know, maybe you can't control where you can go or what you can do, but, you know, just because your gym's closed doesn't mean you can't go work out. Like, you were running up and down your stairs enough times to climb Mount Everest, right? Is that how I read that?
Yeah, that's something that I did the week before last, actually. In the UK, we're still allowed to go out. We can still go to the shop and we can exercise outdoors, but obviously there's still restrictions in place. So most of the time we're encouraged to, you know, stay inside and exercise inside. So this was, I kind of came up with this challenge that actually, I wanted it to kind of in the spirit of stay at home adventures. I decided to climb Mount Everest on my stairs. And I've only got one set of stairs. So I had to do it 2,137 times up and down to get that height gain.
Wow.
So it was a weird experience, but it kept me really focused and it was quite fun. And, you know, it was a bit of a laugh doing
it. But it took multiple days, right?
Yeah, it took 8 days. It was like 21 hours in total.
Wow.
Read the whole thing.
So, like every day, did you just like wake up and like, all right, at 9 o'clock, I'm going to go up and down the stairs for an hour? Or was it just like every so often you would just do a few flights?
Oh, so it was like very much like, okay, I'm doing some climbing now. So I'd set out like 2 or 3 hours. Like most days it was 3 hours. 21 hours in total. So over 8 days, that's like pretty much 3 hours a day of climbing on the stairs.
So, I mean, that's physically exhausting, but that's also like a mental challenge. Cause I've been doing the long distance running and, you know, like going upstairs even more so, but you got to constantly keep your mind in check between the boredom and then just struggling with the pain of like how sore your legs are getting, how tired you are. You know, how do you keep yourself engaged?
Yeah. I mean, it's that's part of it. It is so boring going up and down the stairs. And, you know, after I kind of committed to it, there's a bit of social accountability. You know, I announced on Instagram, it's like, right, I'm doing this. I'm going to climb Everest on my stairs. And then, you know, you're like 10 hours in and you're like, okay, the novelty's worn off. But, you know, I set this challenge and I kind of want to see it through. I do a lot of long distance running as well. So I kind of just, you settle into it and you're just going to that space where you just kind of, you know, you stay in your head and you just like, you know, you just try and carry on and distract yourself as much as possible. And, you know, I was listening to a lot of music and you know, that was just kind of motivating and just thinking about ideas as well.
Whenever I go on long distance running, every once in a while something will come into my head and you'll kind of see me stop for a moment, either write down the idea or do the voice recording. It's funny how you kind of empty your brain and you're trying to just focus on the running and then all of a sudden these weird ideas just, I don't know, they just kind of emerge. I don't know why that happens or how to explain that.
Yeah, it's nice actually. I find that a lot of ideas for me as well come when I'm running.
Yeah.
And your body's, I guess it's, you know, your mind can just relax and get into that rhythm, I guess.
It's quite it's kind of like a meditative state. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is.
Well, how'd you get into long distance running?
So this was back off the whole project basically. Mm-hmm. What happened? Experienced all of this anxiety, started exploring all of this philosophy that was very practical, and I came up with all of these tools and tricks. And then I needed to test them out in the real world.
Right.
And I had to build up to this because I was as I said before, in a really bad place. But it took a while, and actually then I started doing all of these different challenges, and these became like a platform to test out all of these ideas that I'd been reading. And this is where I started to explore all these different things. And this is what my book talks about, all of these weird and wonderful challenges that I've started to do and that I've completed. And actually now it's become a lifestyle, and now it's just something that I continue to look for all of these different things. So running was naturally one of the big things that came up. And I wanted to run a marathon because I'd never done it before. And this was a big you know, this would be a big thing for me. It really helped me with my confidence, especially at that time when I was really struggling. So that committing to a big challenge like that, training for it, and then completing it. And, you know, you get to mile 20 or 22 and your body's so exhausted.
Yeah.
You really have to go into your head. And this is what, again, all of this stuff that I've been studying, it really helped me. And I could push through. And actually, it was a huge confidence boost. And these things compound. And that's why I like to seek out all these different challenges, because the more you do, the more you step out of your comfort zone, kind of the more that helps you, I think. And these, all of these experiences build up, and you can go back to them in your mind as well. You can say, oh, look what you've achieved. So
yeah. One thing I've been doing over the last couple of years is in my phone, I've got like a note, and it just says 2020. And then I write down my accomplishments as I go through the year. And, you know, January and February, there's like one or two things in there. You don't think much of it. But, you know, two things happen from that. One, it motivates you to go out and try to set some accomplishments for it. And then two, by the time you get 6 months in or towards the end of the year, you start looking back and you're like, oh, wow, I actually have done a lot. And, you know, when you're having those days where you're not quite feeling yourself and you're down, you can look over what you've done and you're like, all right, I can get out of bed. I can go out and, you know, give this day my all again. So yeah, running's been really beneficial. I started with a 5K. I just did like a 3 mile run my first time. How did you get started into it? Did you just go out for the marathon, or did you just kind of step into it?
Yeah, I went for the half marathon first.
Yeah.
The trail half, which was, that was all kind of part of the training. I'd done a bit of running before, but then, and it kind of, yeah, when I started going through all of this, this kind of change, that's when it came up. And I guess after doing that first one, I kind of felt like a runner at that point.
Yeah.
I'd gained so much experience and done quite a few races. So now, yeah, that's, I like the marathon distance, because I think it's quite brutal. It's,
if you could run a half marathon, you're a runner. There's not too many people that can do it. Just telling people that you can run a half marathon, they'll question you. They think you're insane. They're like, why would you even try to do that?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the thing is, though, I think that even if people are just going out and doing like a mile, just anything, yeah, you are a runner if you're running, I think.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a distance, like a minimum distance, really. I think anyone can get into it. Yeah. And there's so many benefits to it. Personally, yeah, really, I love trail running, because it's out in nature and you're not on the tarmac and you're out in the woods and the mountains and, well, I say the mountains, but when, you know, whenever I can get to the mountains.
Right.
I live outside London, so we don't have, okay, a lot of mountains nearby.
But you still have like some decent trails where you can get off, and there's some elevation changes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that elevation makes a big difference. You know, I'm in like the mountains of Tennessee, but you know, they're Eastern America mountains, so they're not like massive, but you know, still, it definitely brings a different element into it. Those trail runs are really special. I like those a lot too. You know, I've gotten into the obstacle course racing, like Spartan races. Have you ever tried any of those yet?
I've done an obstacle course race. Yeah, I haven't done Spartan race actually. Yeah. I've seen that. It's it looks really cool.
It's something else. It's such a strange challenge, because you know, they've got different levels. So the first one's a sprint. It's only like 4 miles. And you know, most people can get through that one, no problem. But then some of the longer ones are like 8 to 13 miles, and it creates this weird dynamic where you got to be in really lean shape so you can run far, but then you also have to like flip a 400-pound tire.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to do your cardio, then you got to do your strength training. And it seems like every single one of them I've done, like, I wish I would have done a little bit more running or a little bit more like weight training. I've never gone through one and felt like completely prepared for it.
Oh, well, that's good though, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
If you think those things that you actually,
I'm kind of struggling right now with the shelter in place, because one of my big tricks for staying so motivated is that I would schedule a race, and then every day I wanted to skip the gym or skip a run, I would think, no, I can't. I've got that Spartan race coming up and it's only 6 weeks away. So I got to go run today. And now I'm finding myself kind of, you know, I'm still motivated, but I don't have that challenge anymore, like incentivizing me to keep going. So I've done good on the weight side of it, but I probably have not been running as much as I used to.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. Having something in the calendar is massively motivating. And yeah. I always try to have a few races coming up. I mean, obviously, similar situation here. I don't have anything in the calendar.
So that's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. But that's the thing. I think you're looking outside of, you know, the box, and that's where you come up with strange ideas. So maybe you should climb Everest on your stairs.
I'm really thinking about doing that. So I've got this insane driveway. It's really steep.
I heard on your other on one of your podcasts you were saying you had like a quarter mile long driveway that's like really steep. So
it's really long. Yeah, I mean, this when you're driving up it, there's a part where you can't even see the road because like you can't see over the hood of your car. So and it's right at the top too, so it's like the last like 10 feet or so hard. But my Garmin will give me like 7 flights of stairs when I go up it, so it's pretty good elevation.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you just need to do some maths now and then figure out how many times you go up and down the drive.
I'm gonna do that. I like that idea. I'm gonna do the math and try to see what the elevation climb is. I may have to find a smaller mountain first. I don't know about Mount Everest. We'll build up to it.
Yeah, but that's it. It's being creative though, isn't it? There's lots of that happening at the moment.
I like that idea. And then like you said, the social media pressure, if you put it out there and then people know you're gonna do it, you have to.
Yeah, social accountability. As soon as you sort of say that it's happening, you know.
It's fun. It. Yeah.
There was quite good actually. It's quite good to have that accountability, I think.
Yeah.
It does feel like you kind of follow through with things.
It's huge. There was somebody made a push-up challenge recently where it was like they put it on Twitter. So for every like they got, they would do 10 push-ups or something like that. And you know, I've got a pretty sizable following. And I knew when I put this out, I'm like, I'm going to regret this. I got to put a timeline on it. Like, all right, for the next like 5 hours. So I'm like, all right, however many people like this, there's so many push-ups I'll do. I'll do 10 for every like. And I end up getting like 75 likes. So I'm like, all right, I'll do 750 push-ups the next day. And I work out a lot. I do push-ups a lot just because, you know, it's like a vanity workout. You know, guys want to have bigger arms and chest, right? So I'd never done 750 push-ups in a day before, though. And I got around 400, and it got to the point where I'm like, my arms aren't functioning right anymore.
Yeah, I bet.
And then, you know, like long distance running, it just became like a mental challenge at that point, you know. But I got her done.
Did you do it all in one session?
Well, I started doing 50 at a time, you know. So I did the first 50, and that was no problem. I'm like, all right, it's great. And then I kind of biked a little bit on my stationary bike, and I did another 50, and I knocked out like 200 like right away. And then as the day went on, it was getting harder. I'm like, all right, I'll do 40 next. And by the end of the day, I was doing like 5 at a time.
Oh, that's funny. That's good though. That's really cool. Really nice thing to do.
Yeah, so I love your idea of like all these challenges and stuff. So like your book's full of like 43 different challenges you can do.
Yeah, well, it says 43, and that's basically there are 43 challenges, but there's ways that we can expand each one. And I actually, one of the main things I do is encourage people to find their own challenges. And these are just things that I've done that can just be used for inspiration. And you guys, they're all my personal accounts of how I've done each challenge.
I like it. Yeah, I saw you got the cold showers on there. It's kind of become like a meme. It's become like a joke where people make fun of it now. But it's a good idea. I do kind of like the idea of like intentionally making your life hard. And I think it was, I don't remember how long ago it was, like 3 or 4 years ago, Wim Hof. You heard him, the Iceman?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
He was where I first heard the idea of the cold shower, because he was doing like these ice baths in the Arctic where he would like just sit there for minutes. But he's like a genetic freak. He can do it. And I don't know if it's his body or his mind, but he'll sit there and he's comfortable.
Yeah. I mean, well, he claims that anyone can do it, and he trains people. You can actually go on a Wim Hof course in Poland in the winter, and there's probably like 50 people there, and you climb a mountain in your underpants.
Your underpants.
Yeah. I haven't done it. I mean, it sounds amazing, but
it does.
he's basically saying you can train it. And I think, you know, to a certain degree, we can. We can, you know, by exposing ourselves to the cold, we get more resilient to the cold. And do you know the Stoics used to do this as well? They would practice.
Really?
Discomfort in loads of different ways. Heat exposure, cold exposure. They would practice sleeping on the floor to practice discomfort. They would eat less. They would fast from eating and drinking. And like a lot of these ideas aren't new.
Right.
The Stoics would do it so that they could practice their philosophy. And there were tons of ways they would do this. There was one Stoic philosopher called Cato, and he would turn up to an event wearing a ridiculous outfit. But in reality, it was probably just a different coloured cloak. But he would wear something deliberately that's different so that he could practice feeling like an idiot. And all of his peers would laugh at him. And he would do that so that he could practice that. So
that's an important lesson, though.
Yeah, it's really cool. So one of my challenges was to adapt that, like just wear something stupid and go out. And just embarrass yourself.
I've been like dressing up like really formal when I go out, because like now like nobody goes out unless it's like for the groceries. So like every Friday I go and get a growler of beer at this bar that I like and I want to support because it's like this local place.
Yeah.
And like I'll wear like a sport jacket and khakis when I go in there, and like every once in a while people are like, why are you dressed so nice? Do you still work? I'm like, no, it's just I leave the house like twice a week now, so I might as well make an event out of it. And you know, it's kind of nice to dress up like that once in a while, because you feel more important, people tend to treat you better.
Yeah.
You know, so I like the idea of, you know, embracing that feeling, because after you start doing it for a while, it doesn't feel weird anymore. You know, like when you're a college kid, most of your friends are dressed in sweatpants and a sweatshirt. And then the idea of going to class wearing a suit jacket or like a blazer or whatever, like it's probably like going in your underwear. Like it's literally that much anxiety, right? Because you're going to, you know, people are going to be like, hey, why are you dressed like that? And you're going to have to like defend your position. But that exposure makes you more comfortable in it, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's, you know, we'll all feel uncomfortable if we, you know, how to wear like a fancy dress outfit and then walk down, you know, like a busy street. And that's something that Cato would be a big fan of, that kind of idea, deliberately looking like an idiot so that you can practice that, because, you know, it's an interesting idea.
It is. So, yeah. You know, a lot of these ideas, like the idea of climbing Mount Everest or running a marathon, you know, there's always that resilience where people think that I can't do this. It's just, it sounds impossible. And, you know, I found that to break that mindset of like, I can't do whatever, is you got to find one of those that sounds impossible and yet is still somehow manageable. And then once you've done one, it's like all bets are off. Like you can do anything, right? Have you found that to be true?
Oh, 100%. Like a lot of these challenges that are in the book, there were tons before, and there's loads that I've done that haven't made it in there. And actually the first 6 months before I even started doing all of this was very slow because, as I said, I was in a very bad place. So actually it took time, and some of those smaller challenges were just getting the bus, you know, getting the bus to work. And that was a big deal. But then they compound, and over time, you know, you're in a place where, you know, you find it difficult to walk to the bench in your local park. And then a couple of years later, you're hanging on the side of a cliff with 200 meters below you. And, you know, you're putting yourself in this crazy situation, doing all these ridiculous challenges. It doesn't happen overnight, but it's a gradual thing. And I think these all of this compounds over time, and you just get a little boost each time you leave your comfort zone. Slowly it starts to expand, and then before you know it, you're doing things that you could never have imagined doing.
Yeah, it happens fast too. I mean, I only started running a couple of years ago, and now I'm running, you know, 26 mile races. It's unreal. It becomes like an addiction.
It's amazing. It's what the body can do. I think we're capable of so much more than we think as well.
Yeah, I like that idea. We're capable of so much more. And, you know, as you said, it builds on it. So, you know, once you've taken that first step, you can, you know, creep in a little farther, and it just keeps growing. So it's just that first step's the hard part. You know, how do you get the guy that's like stuck on the couch to start running or to start whatever?
Yeah, I think it's small steps though, isn't it? It's just setting things to little challenges and just kind of building up to bigger things, and just having like a list, a bucket list of things that you want to do. I love the idea of the bucket list, because that's quite motivating when you write down all of these things that you really want to do.
Yeah.
But I really love the idea of an anti-bucket list. The anti-bucket list of all the things that you don't want to do. that actually could really help you to build mental strength and actually to help you to overcome fears and you've never wanted to do. For instance, I used to hate needles. Like, I had a real problem with needles. So that's not going to go on my bucket list. That's not something that I'm actively wanting to do. That will go on the anti-bucket list. I don't want to go and, you know, have an injection. I hate the thought of it. So naturally, that's something that actually there's a huge amount of growth that can happen if I deliberately do that, if I deliberately put myself in a situation where I'm exposed to needles. So acupuncture is the... I went and had acupuncture.
Really?
Yeah, so this was how I dealt with the fear of needles. That goes on the anti-bucket list.
And you start feeling,
you know. So it's looking at what you don't want to do as well. There's a lot of growth to be had through those experiences that we kind of shy away from.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like heights is another one for you. I saw the picture of the Willis Tower. I still call it the Sears Tower.
Yeah. I had a problem with heights, but I mean, I'm a climber, so I do a lot of climbing, which is kind of, I guess it's a bit counterintuitive, but over time you get used to it. But it's towers, they still get me. I think it's because they're just so high and so, you know, so vertical. A lot of the time when I'm climbing, it's not quite as, you know, not quite like that.
Well, I mean, a mountain still feels like ground. Like you're still kind of grounded a little bit, whereas like a tower is unnatural, it's steeper, it's a little different. I can see that.
Yeah, it definitely feels different for me as well. I feel like all the exposure I've had in like the high mountains and like when I'm climbing feels distinctly different from being at the top of a tower, walking out onto grass. It's a brilliant building, stunning building.
Yeah, it's something else. I've been in it. It's been a while. They didn't have the little what do you call those things? They have like these little glass rooms that stick out the side of it now.
Boxes on the top, yeah.
It's the craziest thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you can even look down and it's just glass. I mean, you can see down to the road. And I mean, it's like...
Yeah, I mean, I've never been so sweaty just doing that. It was just unbelievable.
It's terrifying.
But yeah, it's all of these things that if you just push yourself a little bit,
I like it.
Experience.
Well, I saw that you had some like coronavirus specific shelter challenges. The idea of like, you know, things you can do now, necessarily challenges, but different ideas. Like one of them was like just reaching out and calling some friends that you've like, you know, lost touch with.
Yeah. So I wrote a blog recently about different things we can do at the moment, and there's loads of stuff that we can just because we can't go out. You know, there's still loads of things we can do, and we can call exciting project.
I like the idea of reaching out to people because, like, people are they're more engaged in conversation right now. You know, people are more likely to want to talk to you on the phone because they've got a little bit of time and they miss that human interaction. You know, even like going out in public when I do, you know, I've noticed people aren't on their phone as much. Like, they're actually like paying attention to what's going on around them.
Mm. I think it's so important as well, being able to, you know, connect with people. Zoom have done very well out of this.
Yeah.
Their stock prices have soared, I think, over the last...
It's up quite a bit. Yeah. 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 We're using Zoom right now. So.
it's great to connect with people. And, you know, I've spoken to people that I haven't spoken to in quite a long time, and just checking in with them is actually really nice.
Yeah. Yeah, here some people are starting to do like virtual cocktail hours where they get on Zoom and they just hang out with their friends and talk and drink. Have you been on one of those yet?
Well, I do a quiz every Saturday. That's what we're doing with someone.
Yeah. I've got one every Friday we do.
Did you a quiz or just like
just like a cocktail hour where we just hang out and talk to each other? It's just a bunch of guys I've been working with and writing with and stuff, so it's been a hit, you know. It's fun. People seem to like it. I'm curious what will happen when things go back to normal and everything's open. Because I think some people will still do them every once in a while because, you know, there's always going to be the problem of geography where you want to hang out with some friends that maybe moved away or whatever.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's really nice to do that. One of my best friends has moved to Denver a couple of years ago. So that's been really nice, actually, video calling and
yeah,
catch up with him.
Yeah. And it's a brave new world.
Yeah.
So, how long have you been doing this blog now? You've been writing for a while, right?
Yeah. So the blog has been live a couple of years, a year and a half, actually.
Couple of years. So, yeah. You know, what was the motivation from taking what you've learned and going online with it?
I think it was all kind of tied in with the project, getting the book out there and actually having a platform to continue practice writing as well. I think it's important to have something like that.
I think it's huge. Yeah. I didn't expect to become somebody that would write online, but I started writing. I was going through my divorce and I had a lot of anger and emotions, and I just started writing in a journal. And then, you know, I'd kind of worked through some of my issues, but it just kind of became a habit at that point. So then I had a couple of things that I liked and I started putting them online, trying to help people. And, you know, it's amazing the kind of connections that you can make when you start writing online and, you know, putting your ideas out there, because people that see your way of thinking start finding you, which is really interesting.
Mm. Yeah. And there's no barrier, is there? You can actually just write a thing and it's straight out there.
It's so easy to do. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cheap even, really. I mean, and then with social media, it's fairly easy to share. I don't see any reason why anybody wouldn't want to start one. Even if you only do it like once a month or whatever, it's neat to have your own piece of virtual real estate.
Yeah, no, it's a nice way of looking at it. Yeah, I think it's I think it's really cool. It's definitely, it's a craft as well. I think that actually the more you do it, you know, the better your writing will get.
Yeah, no, like the first, 25 pieces I put out there, I look back at them and I cringe, you know, I'm like, this isn't me. Who wrote this? So I've taken some of them down, but I try to keep my old stuff up there just to remind myself. And I think it's inspiring to other people. Like, you know, you go online and you always find these like websites that are, you know, they've been around for years, because that's how you found them, because they've gotten popular, right?
Yeah.
You don't notice like they're growing, their growth stages. So one thing I do whenever I find someone that I think is like incredibly professional and they're showing this great expertise, is I'll go back and find their oldest piece of writing that they have and I'll read it. I'm like, oh, okay, this is how he started. It's kind of inspiring to see that they had such humble origins.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice to see that change. Funny.
Yeah.
How do you write then? Do you have structure to your writing? Are you kind of someone who wakes up in the morning and then you?
Yeah. I do. I'm kind of fidgety sometimes, so I have to wake up and exercise first, or I won't be able to sit still enough to write. So I wake up almost every morning around 5 or 6 o'clock, and I usually get up fairly quickly, and then I'll either start doing weights or biking or go for a run. And then once I do that, I just sit down and type, and, you know, I don't always know what I'm going to write about or how I'm going to write. Sometimes it's just, I'm just going to write these thoughts down. Other days it's like, I need to write an email or I need to finish up a piece of something. But, it feels like to me, for every like 1,000 words that I actually put out there, I'm probably writing at least 2,000 or 3,000, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Cause certain stuff, just either it's not really interesting to other people. Maybe it's just me sharing what I've been dealing with in my head, or it's just not good. You know, that there's that too. And there's nothing wrong with writing. I think it's good to practice it and to make sure you do it. So I probably write, I don't know, minimum 500 words every morning, usually more like 1,000 or 2,000 words a day.
Yeah.
What about you? What's your system?
I guess it depends on what I'm doing. I kind of like you. I think I do write a lot and then I cut back. I edit.
Yeah.
I would rather just throw a lot of stuff out there and then kind of cut back afterwards. I think that's a good way of working. It works for me anyway.
The editing's huge. One thing I've figured out, it took me a while to get there, was if I would write on, say, Monday and then edit it on Tuesday, I kind of detach myself from it. And then I start reading it like I'm the reader, and I'm looking at it and I'm like, I don't like this line. It's stupid. Or I see this other line, I'm like, I can't even understand what I'm saying here. And it allows me to kind of put myself in the reader's shoes. And that's when it goes from being this like, okay, little stream of conscious thing to something worth reading.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's that process, isn't it? Just chiseling away at this, this thing that you're creating. It's interesting. I think everyone has a different process as a writer. I guess for me, because I'm a teacher, I do a lot of writing in my holidays, my school holidays. I used to write very early in the morning. I'd wake up and every day would be like, I'm going to write. But now I feel that what happens is it takes a bit of time to get into like a flow with it. And then if I have to break out of that, I find that quite difficult. So when I'm in my school holidays and I've got a lot of time off, that's when I do most of my writing now. We use that time or on the weekends as well, actually. So I know that I can just kind of do as much as I need to, as much as I want to. So I kind of had experience of both, like waking up and consistently doing, you know, like 2 hours. It just depends on what kind of project is in the pipeline.
Yeah. It's I don't envy you, because I was just finishing up my book recently, and I love writing a book. I think it's really fun until like I finish that first draft. After that, I think it's so hard, because I feel like I can write these great ideas down, and then I get done and I look at it and I'm like, I don't know why I wrote it in this order. Nothing seems to flow right. Nothing makes sense. And every book I've written, I look at it and I'm like, it's trash. I should just start over. The first time I actually did. And I don't know. Getting a professional editor was huge. That makes a big step. And then you just got to kind of hammer it out. That's the hard part to me. I think anybody can sit down and write 30,000 words or whatever you want to write. But to like go through and edit it down and cut it up and to make it flow right, that's the real challenge. That's where the magic's made too.
Yeah, absolutely. And that takes a lot of time. It's difficult. But I think every writer's going to feel self-conscious about what they've created. So being aware of that and accepting it, that there will always be something that you could tweak whenever you reread something. Like, why didn't I do that? Or you think about changing things, but there is a point when you can be changing things for the sake of changing things rather than just, you know, it just becomes, is that a necessary change, or are you just being slightly, you know, too over the top?
Yeah, I like the phrase, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. And I have to repeat that to myself a lot, because I don't know if it's my personality or the way school teaches us, but you know, we all want to be straight A students. But in reality, if it takes you 4 weeks to write something versus, you know, 4 days to write something, you're probably better off writing what, 7 pages or 7 articles to that one. And, you know, even if it's got a couple that aren't perfect, out of that 7, there's gonna be some really big hits, some gems. And, you know, you can spend too much time trying to make it perfect, and most people don't even care. You know, they don't care if there's a couple of grammatical errors or a couple of lines that are kind of, you know, clumsy or whatever.
Yeah. Well, they're not going to see it in the same way that you do. It's your baby. You've created it. You know, there's a freshness over it. You've put all this time and effort and energy into it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, as a writer, you're sort of hypercritical of your own work.
Yeah, very much so. You know, I constantly deal with imposter syndrome. You have issues with that too?
Yeah. I think everyone does. I think it's natural.
Yeah.
I think it's part of doing things, especially if you're doing things that are slightly outside of your comfort zone. You feel like, oh, this is new for me. Should I really be doing this? But that's the whole point of it. Actually, you're going to grow by doing this. The more you do it, the more comfortable you get with it.
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's one of the bigger struggles. You know, and there's just, sometimes there's just days where I just got to like walk away from it. And I'm like, all right, maybe today is not the day where I sit down and write, because I just don't feel like, I don't feel good about it. So I'll go run, you know, today's a good day to go run.
Yeah, nice. Well, I think, exactly. Having that balance. Do you have quite a strict routine then in the morning? Are you one of these people who have very structured start to the day?
Yeah, it's funny. I was actually just writing about this. I used to have like a very structured life where I worked a corporate job and I had to be there at a certain time. And like, now I don't. I can kind of do whatever I want as long as I get the results. And yet I feel like I'm more routine. I'll break it once in a while, but I like having the routine. because there's times where I'll just sit there and I'm like, I don't know what to do. And by having this routine in place, it's just, all right, it's, you know, 10 o'clock. This is usually when I just kind of sit down and focus and read something or write something, and I'll just do that. So yeah, it takes time to make it though. I can't just sit down and decide like, all right, at this hour, I'm gonna do this and this and this and this. Like it took like weeks to kind of watch my day. And what helped me was I would just journal at the end of the night. I'm like, all right, here's what I did today. Here's what went right. Here's what didn't go right. And then you just slowly kind of start cutting away the stuff that's tearing you down and add to the stuff that's doing well. Yesterday, for example, this is pretty uncharacteristic of me. I ate like a shitload of Wheat Thins. Like I got hungry and I started snacking on them. And it was like that good reminder of why I don't normally do that. I'm like, oh, I felt sluggish the rest of the day. I felt kind of out of it. I just didn't feel good about myself. I'm like, that's right. I don't eat Wheat Thins like in that amount of quantity because I feel like shit afterwards. So write that down. Don't do it again.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. I think it's structure is important. It helps, certainly. I feel like the morning for me is the most productive time. That's when I have most structure, and then the day just kind of dissolves as it goes along.
I feel the same way. I think there's some people that can't do that. There's people that are morning persons, there's people that are night persons, but I think by and large, morning's more productive for people because, you know, what happens at 8 o'clock at night? You know, maybe there's a sport game on that you want to watch. Maybe your friends are hitting you up to go out, you know. Girlfriend wants to watch a movie with you, but in the morning, like almost everyone's being productive in some way, or at least leaving you alone. So it's that perfect time to kind of sit there and just, you know, get some like good deep work in.
100%. And it starts the day well. If you start the day well, then it really sets you up. I used to hate the mornings. I really hated the mornings.
Yeah.
So I had to fight hard to become a morning person, and that took a long time.
Well, how'd you change? What made you go from hating the mornings to embracing them?
Structure, having something to actually do. Like I know every morning I'm going to get up and I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, and just forcing myself to do that for long enough, eventually it becomes, you know, natural.
It's huge. Having something to do makes you want to get out of bed. It's that simple.
Exactly. If you're getting up for a reason, like I'm getting up to do things that I really want to do and that I know are helping me to, you know, become better at everything I'm doing. So naturally, that's something that I think is hugely important, that structure.
Yeah. I would want to do stuff all day, right? And I get to the end of the day and I would kind of get down on myself. Like, I meant to do all this thing. I forgot to pay this bill. I forgot to, you know, write an email to that person. And I would feel guilty about not doing these things. And it would kind of bum me out. And it would bring me down. And it took me a while to realize this, but instead of like getting upset about it, I said, oh, well, I'll just do that tomorrow. And then I would make a list, and everything that I felt guilty of not getting done, I put it down the list. And instead of like having this thing that I would just keep forgetting about for days and days and days, it went to the top of the list for the next day. And then it motivated me to get up in bed the next morning, and I would go hammer it out. I'd feel good about it. I cross off the list, and you know, I like to put like the easiest thing first if I can.
Yeah,
just you gotta knock one thing out. After that, I don't mind if it's hard, but I want that one easy win.
Yeah, it gives you confidence as well. I think if you start knocking things off the list,
I think Jordan Peterson's idea of like make your bed. You know, you ever read his book?
12 Rules for Life.
Yeah, he talks about, you know, making your bed first thing in the morning. It's like that's that one little piece of chaos that you can turn into order. You know, if you can handle that, you can build from that.
Yeah, it's a lovely idea. I think it does. Yeah, starting the day well is massive. And you're right, I think exercising in the morning. I'm normally so tired at the end of the day that I don't want to, you know, it's hard to go around and motivate yourself to go out and do things.
Whereas it's really hard.
Yeah, I don't know, I have more energy. I think you get used to it as well. And that's something that it does take time, but then you become that morning person.
Well, and it all starts the night before, right? So, you know, if you're staying up till 2 a.m. playing video games, or if you're up late drinking, you're probably gonna have a pretty rough morning, you know, and that happens sometimes. But if you're laying in bed at 9 o'clock at night reading a book before you go to bed, and then you wake up refreshed, it's completely different.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes it's harder. I got the habit of in the mornings, I would do this thing called an alpine start. Basically, I don't know if you know, have you done a lot of mountaineering? Have you done much climbing? No,
not at all. It scares the hell out of me.
Oh, look, there you go. This is a perfect challenge for you. Maybe you should put this on your list.
It's on the list. Might be towards the bottom, but it's on it.
Well, there's this concept in mountaineering and alpine climbing. When you're high up in the mountains, you do an alpine start. Basically, you get up really early so that when you go out onto the glaciers, the ice is still frozen because there's snow bridges over the crevasses, okay. The giant holes in the glacier, still frozen. So if you get up early enough, all of that's going to be solid. So you can go up, you can do your climbing, you can come back down before lunch, because in the afternoon it gets really hot and all of the snow bridges have the potential to collapse. So the concept is you get up super early and you get a lot done before lunchtime. So once a week I would try and do that. It's obviously not the same when you're at home and, you know, you've just got a normal day at work, but the idea of an alpine start, you get up ridiculously early. Again, this is a challenge. This is not easy to do, but you get up ridiculously early and then suddenly you've got all this extra time that you wouldn't have. And then you have to battle with the rest of the day because you're really tired, but it's still, that's quite an interesting challenge, I think. So I would get up at 4:30 and then go and do like a long run and do all this stuff before work. And then you turn up at work and you've done so much. You've almost had like a day. Which is kind of funny, and you know, it's an interesting idea. Like, I really got into that.
There's something too, like waking up and like getting so much done before most people have finished their first cup of coffee. You know, like they're struggling to get going. You kind of like glance down at your Fitbit or whatever, and you're like, "Wow, look at how active I've been today." And you look at your planner, and it's like, "Look how much shit I got done already." There's something to that, even though. Like, it's weird because, like, theoretically it shouldn't matter because it's just time, but I don't know. There's something about getting things done before everybody else is even, like, moving. It's empowering. I think it's, like, our competitive nature, maybe. I don't know.
It is a nice feeling when you're just starting the day and you've actually got like, a huge amount of things under your belt already.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah, I like that. Awesome. Very cool. Well, the book comes out June 9th. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. It's coming June out. 9th. So it's, just getting prepared for that. I can't wait. Right. It's a really exciting time.
43 challenges. Do they like scale in difficulty to the start where it's like something very manageable?
So it's mixed. They're all mixed in there. So
okay.
Some of them are really easy, very quick to do. Some of them epic, like training for a marathon is a pretty epic challenge.
Yes.
So one of the challenges is run a race. So obviously that can be run your first 5k, or it could be run the ultra marathon de Mont Blanc 100 miles. So there's a huge range, and obviously you tailor it to where you are and what you want to do. So for me, then I talk about my experience. I ran a marathon, so I talk about that in the book. But yeah, there's loads of things like how do you do it, why you should do it, why it's going to be good for you, and loads of like tips and tricks and things. Yeah. Each different challenge. Some of them are small, some of them are massive. Another epic one is learning a language, a second language. And that's huge. It's very committing. And for me, I started learning Japanese. I fell in love with Japan.
Really?
I absolutely love it. And this was something that I never thought I'd be able to do. I had a very self-limiting belief on that. I was rubbish at languages at school. And that was almost the reason to do this, to kind of prove myself wrong. And also, this is a way of stepping out of your academic and intellectual comfort zone. Learning a foreign language is really hard. Yeah. And actually, it's a battle. And that's exactly what, you know, this kind of, I guess you could call it training or stoic training is all about.
It's quite a commitment.
But yeah, huge commitment. And that's like a big example. But then there's loads of short things, you know, smaller things like taking a cold shower is very small. And then I talk about how you can turn it into a bigger challenge with ice baths and ice swimming and all this other crazy stuff.
Yeah, I like that idea. So out of the 43 challenges, have you done all of these, or are you in the process of doing them all?
So all of these, yeah, I've done all of these. These are wow. them. So every challenge is my anecdote as well. What I've
That's
been,
cool.
How I did it. And there's, you know, things that you can do to make them harder. And these are the only 43. I had loads that I'd done and I continue to do. But these were just like the, I guess, the 43 most varied ones. And that's it. Yeah. It's all about variety, because I think that's the ultimate way to kind of train our minds. We know how to train our bodies. We go to the gym, we work out. It's kind of obvious. But training your mind is different, and you need lots of different tasks and challenges. So a lot of these are, you know, based around embarrassing ourselves or pushing ourselves physically or just doing strange things and looking at our fears and turning our fears into challenges. So there's a huge variety of different things.
Well, there's some of them strange. There's like some theories out there that just by trying to learn new skills and keeping your mind engaged in new ideas, like that can help fight against Alzheimer's and keeping your mind fresh and active and, you know, youthful. So it makes a lot of sense to shake it up. I like that. So plus you can kind of overdo it. You know, like I kind of overdid it with the running last year, and I burnt myself out a little bit, and now I'm like kind of scaling it back where I'm still running, but like I'm not trying to constantly one up myself anymore. I'm like, all right, you know, I ran a marathon. I don't need to go run the ultra by next month.
Yeah, you're right. It's finding balance, and that's it. Like a lot of these challenges, some of them are really hard. Some of them are a lot easier, and it's just, yeah, see, finding a good mix, and everyone's going to be different. And ultimately the thing to do is to create your own syllabus for different, you know, different things that you can do. So you can borrow some of my ideas, but then there's a huge section that encourages you to create your own. You need to personalize it, because everyone's different. So what scares you is not necessarily what's going to scare me, and you can build challenges around that. So
it's hard to get started too. You know, it helps to see like some examples of like what somebody else has done too. You know, like even for me, because this is something I've been doing, I've been constantly challenging myself, but to think of 43, like that would take a while to get there. So it's good to have some examples of like where you can start. You know, I never would have thought about climbing Mount Everest on my stairs. It just never occurred to me. But then again, on your Instagram, I see like you actually like dressed it up. Like there's like the little climbing flags, and it looks like fake snow. Well,
yeah, it's all about the summit day. I've got this altitude mask that was actually part of, you know, one of the challenges that I've been doing, where I was using this mask, and it's basically this thing you strap on your face, and it restricts the flow of oxygen, which makes it harder for you to breathe. It's supposed to simulate altitude, but I mean, it doesn't really, but it just makes it harder to breathe, which means that it is harder to do. So
does that help? Like, does that help train you to climb a mountain?
In theory, it does. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, because I grew up in Illinois, where it's very flat and there's not like any elevation change. And then I moved down to Tennessee, and recently I ran an 8-mile Spartan race in I was in Black Mountain, North Carolina, middle of nowhere. And first mile of the race, we're going up this mountain, and I mean, it wasn't even a big mountain, but it was literally the highest I've ever been in my life. And I'm at the end of the first mile, and I'm like, I'm struggling to breathe, and I'm with my team. I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. They're like, you're fine. I'm like, I can't breathe. Like I'm struggling to keep moving. I'm getting tired. I feel lightheaded. And I thought I was in trouble. And it was like the first mile of like an 8-mile race. And then we started going back downhill, and it was like, oh my God, I forgot what it feels like to be normal again. But
yeah,
I had thought about getting one of those masks, but I didn't know if it worked or not.
I mean, the jury's out on that. I'm not entirely sure. Like, it does make it harder to breathe, which naturally makes it a harder exercise. I can't claim that it would really help with acclimatizing, but it's worth trying. You know, I just want to try as many different things. And so,
yeah.
So with this challenge, I put it on for the last day of climbing, this altitude mask, just to kind of get into the spirit of the adventure.
Awesome.
So yeah, it was quite funny. I had the full kit as well, because I've got all my mountaineering kit as well. It just felt weird putting it on inside, but again, that's all, you know, that's kind of part of it, just getting into it.
You have roommates or your girlfriend or anybody in there, or is it just you?
Yes, my girlfriend. She's just at work, like doing. Okay. She's working on the phone, and I'm just kind of going up and down the stairs, and just ridiculous situation. It's kind of funny, but
she's probably used to it by now, though. It's like, oh, that's there goes Ben with this new challenge.
Oh yeah, 100%. She's used to me doing loads of bizarre things, and yeah, she's very supportive of it. So
that's awesome. I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm excited we get to talk and get to know each other a little bit better here. I'm definitely gonna check out this book because I love a challenge and I need some fresh ones. Before we go, where can people find you, and any closing thoughts you want to share before we hang up?
Yeah, okay. So I think the closing thought, I'd say the most important thing for all of us is to find challenges that are personal to us, because I believe that leaving our comfort zones is the greatest way to build mental resilience. And having challenges allows us to kind of practice our personal philosophy. And wherever you find that, I think, you know, it can come from many different places, but having a platform to go out and practice these ideas is really important. And that's what I kind of bang on about a lot. And that's why I try and do all these different things, because it allows me to put all of this philosophy and all of these concepts to the test in a real life situation, I guess. So I think that's what I'd encourage people to try and do. If you want to see what I've been up to, yeah, I think the best place is probably Instagram. You can come and see me there. My handle is @dothingsthatchallengeyou. And my website as well, it's a good place. So I've got an active blog, and that's just benaldridge.com, ALDRIDGE.com. So that's a good place to come and see what I've been up to in a visual way as well, because a lot of these challenges are very visual. Quite good to kind of get the context with that as well.
Yeah, and we'll get you we'll get all those links in the show notes below. And go see what other kind of challenges you can follow. Definitely go check out the Mount Everest. I'm gonna actually link that one specifically because it's quite the image. I think it's really cool.
I've actually written an article for the BMC, which is the British Mountaineering Council.
Really?
So they put that all up on their website, and that's really fun. It's like I give a proper account of what happened, and it's kind of fun. So
maybe that's really fun.
Yeah,
that's awesome. I mean, if you're going out there doing something creative and interesting and challenging, I mean, there's not a whole lot of people that have climbed Mount Everest in their living room.
Well, it's an interesting one anyway. So hopefully we'll be able to get out into the mountains in the near future.
Yeah, we'll get back to it. I'm not worried about that. So awesome. Well, Ben, thanks for coming on the show. I had a lot of fun talking to you, and I think people can learn a lot from this, and I'm excited to read your book.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate being here, and I'm so grateful for this opportunity. So thank you so much for coming here. It's been great fun. Really good.
All right. Thanks, man. Thanks. This is Ryan Feldman, Path to Manliness, signing off. If you enjoyed this episode of the Path to Manliness podcast, be sure to write us a review. That way we can reach more men that are lost and need direction in their life. And if you feel that you are lost and you need direction in your life, or you simply are looking for brotherhood, a sense of belonging, a place where you can be a man, a traditional man, and be around other men who are motivated and working to build something themselves, check out patreon.com/pathtomanliness to gain access to the private Discord server, where you can connect with other highly motivated individuals.